This is designed to be more of a class, so feel free to raise your hand or whatever as we go through this. I want this to be more informal and as helpful to you as possible. As we've been saying, and we started to talk about this last evening, Jesus says, "Lift up your eyes and look into the fields, for they are white unto the harvest." I think the problem oftentimes is we're not lifting up our eyes. We're not prospect conscious. And I'm hoping that we can talk about how to do that more effectively in our session this afternoon. What does it take for a person to be a successful soul winner? Let me suggest first you have to see yourself as a soul winner. You have to understand that this is a part of God's plan and expect God to work with you as you partner with Him in the salvation of souls. Secondly, you have to be determined to grow and to mature in the faith, particularly develop a personal joy of your salvation, so it's a natural thing you want other people to have. And we're going to talk about that in our very last lesson together, overcoming the fear of rejection, establishing a greater confidence in your salvation, and helping you to develop courage. The third step that this weekend is focused in on is you have to get the proper tools and training. And it is absolutely amazing what a difference a proper tool can make. One of my favorite Greek philosophers, Archimedes, said this: "Give me a lever long enough, a fulcrum, and a place to stand, and I can move the world." Wow. I think that expresses well the difference that the right tool can make. I have been very interested in evangelism and soul winning and church growth for over 35 years. And I have had some things at certain times that were pretty effective. And then as the culture changed, suddenly it was not working as well. And so I think it's important that we never change the message, of course, but that we adapt to the culture as much as we can so that we can be as effective as possible. And that's what I'm encouraging the A-Leaf Church to do, and that is certainly one of the reasons why I have shifted over to the big picture, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. Let's look at our slides together for a moment. I believe, and I'm sure you do too, that everyone deserves the opportunity at least once to accept or reject the gospel. That make sense to you? Absolutely. Sometimes we focus in on the same persons over and over and over again, trying to get somebody for the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, or ninth time to obey the gospel. And I'd rather put my interest on trying to get the seed out and have it lay upon as many human hearts as possible, believing that if that person has a good, honest heart, what will happen? They'll respond. If there's anything the parable of the sower teaches us, it's that regardless of the high quality of the seed, if the soil is not the right kind of soil, you're not going to what? You're not going to have the kind of fruit that you need. So I don't know really who has a good and honest heart, and neither do you. I think it's important not to prejudge, frankly. How's the only way you can figure out whether somebody has a good and honest heart or not? Yes, just share the gospel with them and see how they respond. Some people you're just so sure are going to respond, don't, and some people you're kind of skeptical of, do. It's not our job to prejudge, it's our job to ask as many people as possible, would you like to hear the gospel? And you're going to find you're going to get a lot more yeses if you just ask for 1 hour of their time versus trying to get them to sit down with you for 5 or 6 weeks, which is what I used to do in the 80s and 90s. Well, it wasn't that hard to do that in the 80s and 90s, but boy, in the 2000s and beyond, it's become almost impossible. Most of my preaching friends that I talk about these things with have found the same thing. Why do you think that is? Why has that become so much more difficult to do today?
People are busier. They got more stuff to occupy.
Yes.
From the internet, cell phones, TV, you name it.
It's not that people aren't interested. It's that Most people are suffering sort of from an information overload and a schedule that is jam-packed. And so they also sort of have this sense of avoiding commitments, you know, afraid of confrontation. I mean, people don't even want to commit to a cell phone plan anymore, much less commit to 5 or 6 weeks in a row to a Bible study, perhaps with someone they don't know very well. So typically, they'll just back off. And so, wow, is it? I used to think fewer and fewer people are interested. That's not the issue. The issue seems to be that people are just too busy. So if you're going to look for a way to make sure that the gospel is shared, I think it's important that you focus in on some sort of single lesson approach, because obviously God our Savior desires all men to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. And of course, if everybody out there needs to have a chance at least once to hear the gospel, doesn't it also follow that at least at some point, every Christian, in some simplistic way, should be able to explain the gospel and to be able to give a reason for the hope that is within them? 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15. Well, I think so. And of course, as we've said over and over again, the harvest is plenteous. You sow enough seed, you're going to find you're going to have good results. The problem is not in the message. The problem is not in the people. The problem is in the laborers. Pretty much we've left the seed in the barn and this kind of complained about folks aren't interested. It's just not true. So, how do you overcome a lot of these problems? I found this big picture presentation to be the answer. And I frankly believe that results demand respect. Let me tell you some of the stories that I heard about the use of Ken Craig's material that caused me kind of reluctantly to say, I'm going to have to look into this and change. Somebody who's been doing something a certain way for 20 years or more, you know, takes some work to change all your charts, doesn't it, John? The old saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, you can. You just have to work hard at it. So, actually, I know Ken Craig personally. He shared this with me when it's in its embryonic form because he knows of my love of soul winning and all that kind of thing. And I thought it was pretty good, but that isn't what convinced me to shift over. It was a combination of being frustrated that I wasn't able to get the studies that I used to get, and hearing such stories as this. There's a gentleman up in Northern California who had a prison ministry, and he would spend 4 days a week, 8 hours a day, 32 hours a week, regularly going to the prisons and studying with the prisoners. And kind of had a captive audience, right? And so there was never a shortage of prisoners who were willing to sit down and let somebody who would come to visit with them about the Bible. People stand in line. They were lonely. But he would give some more traditional approaches that led with authority and the church and the Bible and those kind of things. And at the end, he would maybe have 3 to 5 baptisms a year. So he wasn't happy with those results either. That's a lot of studies, and in a year's time, not very good results. So he took the big picture of the Bible after learning about it, put it on his laptop, learned it well enough that he could share the version that way. And he started sharing that. You know how many baptisms he had at the end of that following year? 75. He said it was like turning the light switch on. I mean, the difference was just dramatic. And frankly, I think why the difference was so dramatic is he was talking to people about Jesus. He was talking to people about the gospel. And as important as it is that people understand about the authority of the Bible and the church, that's not where the power is. The power's in the gospel. And that's one thing I love about this particular message and this approach. My friend Dan DeGarmo, who is a co-partner with the publisher of Ken's booklet, The Big Picture of the Bible, went to Chillicothe, Ohio. That's a part of the country where he grew up, and there wasn't a faithful church there at all. So he went with another gentleman and about 8 or 9 people, and they decided from scratch to start a church in the city of Chillicothe, Ohio. I don't know if any of you have tried that kind of thing before, but that is really hard to do, to start a church from scratch with such a small number, because you don't have critical mass. There's just so many things about that that are difficult. Well, in about a 8 or 9 year period, using the big picture of the Bible pretty exclusively, and going around town with his laptop and the big picture on it, and asking folks, will you give me an hour of your time so I can share my faith with you? That was his approach. And he's a pretty personable guy. And he got a lot of yeses. And he got a lot of presentations. And they had a lot of baptisms. And of course, you have to follow up afterwards. This is not a one-shot approach. But from next to nothing, they have a thriving church there now with well over 100 members, a building that seats over 200. And that was done in about a decade's time. That's amazing to me. Here in the United States, you hear about that in Nigeria and places like that. But here, absolutely. So I was impressed with that information. Most of you probably heard about the Embry Hills congregation, where Sewell Hall is an elder. I know a lot of folks there. There is a fellow there who was the first one to take the big picture, as far as I know, and try to use flip charts evangelistically. And he started doing this and training a lot of the people there. It's a pretty good-sized congregation there in Atlanta. And he said the first 3 months of using these flip charts and teaching people how to use it, they had 18 baptisms. The elder stood up and said, we haven't had a crop like this. Can't remember the last time. We need to assimilate these people. Why don't you guys stop for a while and let us train these people and disciple them and assimilate them? And so they did that, and about 6 months later they said, okay, you guys can go out again and start asking people for big picture presentations. And they did that, and within 3 months they had another 15 baptisms. Elders got up and said, whoa, kind of overloaded. I thought, I have never in my life heard of a church where people have to say, hold off, we can't handle all the people you're bringing in. So I thought, I've got to look at this and try this myself. So I especially decided when I moved to San Diego, because of what I thought was a great open door there and a great evangelistic opportunity, that I would get this underneath my belt and start using this. And I can't tell you how excited I was when the first 15 people that I shared the gospel with in San Diego back in 2010 said yes. 15 yeses in a row. I had never experienced anything like that in my life. I don't know if you have, John, but I thought, whoa, this is amazing. Now, a lot of that was low-hanging fruit, and a number of those were people who'd been visiting us in the congregation that nobody had ever bothered to ask if they'd like to hear big picture presentations. So there were, a lot of those people that were already indicating a lot of interest rather than just strangers. I just come to town. I didn't know people. And right there underneath everybody's nose was all these people that were visitors' cards that hadn't been followed up on, that kind of thing. Teenagers that had been coming to services that were clearly old enough to be accountable. Nobody ever took them aside personally and shared the gospel with them. I'm the new preacher in town. I did. It was very interesting what happened to me on the 16th time that I presented this. I fully expected that person to respond and to obey the gospel like the other 15 before them. So I presented the big gospel, the big picture to this. It is a big gospel too, but the big picture. To this person, I get done. He says, I'm not really sure I'd be interested in that right now. And I... What? Did I hear you correctly? Yeah, that's not really something I'm interested in. I didn't really learn anything new in that, and I'm not really sure that I believe all of that. I was shocked. I thought, wow, do you realize what's happened to me? I'm going from kind of surprised when somebody says yes to surprised when somebody says no. And the good news is about a year later, that person came forward and was baptized. It just took some time to germinate. We had somebody 2 weeks ago who came forward after services on a Sunday night. We all really rejoiced with her. This woman really came out of the world. It took her 3 months after I counted the cost with her for her to decide, I'm ready to do this. So there's a lot of folks that take some time to let this work on their heart. So don't expect every time right after you're done, someone's going to, you know, rush right down to the building and be baptized, although that does happen a good amount of the time. So those are just some of the things that caused me to recognize what tremendous potential there is in this. And as I've gone around the country and shared this with folks, if they've taken the ball and run with it, and if you have some leadership that says, yes, I'm going to embrace this and support it, like I just expressed to you the other night with Douglas Hills, I'm just getting really good, consistent feedback from other places where I go. So used to be, I'm told in the old days, you go in a gospel meeting, you come back and report all these baptisms. It's a little different. I come into a gospel meeting, do these kind of training classes, and then I just can't wait to get the call to hear the baptism start rolling in. And I hope the same thing happens for you. All right. What happened to my picture here? It looks good there. Well, let me ask you something. If we turn that all around, can you guys see this fairly well? You guys laugh at me. I guess the answer is no. Of course, that would be a great motivation for all of you guys in the back. These seats are the best seats in the house. Interesting. Did maybe the bulb burn out? It looks like something's... There we go. Well, what was it that popped up earlier we had to close?
It's losing, I don't know what that was, some security thing, but what's happening is it's losing the connection. Did this on John last week.
Okay, well, at least it's not just happening to me. It happens to John, too.
Or it is me.
Oh, okay. It's me. Huh? Okay. All right. Well, let's hope this works. All right. So, it is amazing, as I said, what a difference the proper tool can make in evangelism. Remember, this overcomes the problem of know-how. And most folks need to have some guidance or some sort of track to run on. This was one of my favorite experiences with the big picture of the Bible. Chrissy Bottomley. What she wrote was a little longer than this, but I'm asking for folks... Oh, please, no. I'm asking for folks to give me a little testimony after they have responded and ask them what the big picture of the Bible meant to them. And this is what Chrissy wrote. On Thursday night of January 21st, 2013, I had the absolute blessing of submitting my life to Christ with the help of Jesus pulling at my heartstrings and a dear friend's love for me. And that evening, I was baptized. Before I made my first public display of obedience to God, I was welcomed into the home of Brent and Gail Hunter, surrounded by strangers who quickly became my church family, and I was taught the big picture. It only took 55 minutes, and my whole purpose in life was changed forever. The big picture is truly genius. I personally had little Bible knowledge, but I desired to know more about coming to Christ and what the Holy Bible is really all about. I wanted to understand it and know it and apply it to my life. But when I opened the Bible, I was often confused by the language and misunderstood what the messages were telling me. However, the big picture explained all the key main points of what the truth is. And as we flipped through each page and read out loud with each sentence, I began to understand. We were not even halfway through the big picture, and the light bulb came on, and I finally had my aha moment. The way this book is so brilliantly and beautifully illustrated made me completely understand just exactly the five W's, who, what, where, why, and when of the Bible. The big picture lesson is told in such a simple way, but with such a profound impact on my life. I never lost interest. I was like a sponge absorbing every bit of each illustration and each word on the page. I didn't even realize that I'd finished the lesson in less than an hour. I'm living proof that when you keep things simple, short, and sweet, like the big picture, the message that is taught to you is going to have an everlasting impact within you. I'm truly grateful for the big picture message. I didn't think I could ever understand the Bible so well or hear about Bible's truths in such an incredible way. Wow. And it is really neat to see somebody that kind of, you know, gets it. There was one guy who was a Berkeley student that was down visiting one of our members, and really bright fellow, but he had grown up in a secular home. And so he'd never heard the gospel, and he was curious. So we're going through this, and we get to the end, and he just looks at me like this, and he says, "This is amazing!" I said, "Yes, it is." You know what? I think sometimes those of us that have been raised around the gospel and then have heard it over and over again, sometimes, if we're not careful, it becomes a little trite, and we lose sort of the excitement. And when somebody really grasps what Jesus has done for humanity, and what the proper response to the gospel is, and how this all fits together, I mean, it really is powerful. It's an amazing message, and I just love to see the aha experiences and people who never heard the gospel before, and they go, "Oh, I've just been so puzzled, and I couldn't understand why all these different groups were teaching all these different things, and I was so confused, and this just made so much sense, and thank you, thank you, thank you." Obviously, not everybody responds that way, but I've had enough of those kind of responses that I just can't wait to ask people, can I share the big picture of the Bible with you? And that's the kind of enthusiasm that I hope you can generate here, because it truly is contagious. Now, let me turn this around for just a minute. What do you do for somebody who's been a good, solid, faithful member of the church for 40 years or more and has never won a soul, never been fruitful? And back in the recesses of their mind, they feel kind of guilty about that. They know people all around them, including family members, that are not saved, but they don't really know what to say, and they don't want to just get into an argument. And, you know, when I was young, I was in high school, I thought being a soul winner was challenging people to a debate. You know, start talking to people about where they're wrong and why. You know, I won a few arguments, didn't win any souls. That's not what soul winning's about, folks. You're looking for people that are looking, and you've got to have a message that you're passionate about. That's, you know, it's amazing that you can take Ken's material and you just pass it out like a track. It has very little impact. But when you present it from the heart as someone who has experienced the joy of the gospel and really cares about the person that's on the other end, and suddenly you have lives that are changed and transformed. So Marietta Fisher is a member at Kirkland, and first thing I did when I got there is I started talking about the big picture, and I encouraged people to attend my mentoring classes that I have on Tuesday and Thursday nights. It's usually groups of maybe 8 to 10 at a time. And so she joined our first mentoring class, and she worked at it and learned it, and she met somebody at a store and invited them to hear the big picture, and she was shocked when they said yes. She was so excited. She goes, "People really are interested, and this is something I can do." And it was just amazing. This lady's like 62 years old. You can teach an old dog new tricks, right? All right? So I said, would you please explain to us what this has meant to you? This is what Mariana Fisher said. So hopefully this would be a vision for some of you who've never seen yourself like she hadn't until this as a soul winner. She says, it was simple and started exactly where I have started when I teach the young children's classes. I was amazed at the simplicity yet conciseness of presenting God's plan of salvation. There is a lot of material to cover, and there is a learning curve to learning this. But it is manageable with study and practice. It's exactly right. The affirming power of my own faith each time I go through the presentation is indescribable. All of us that have gone through this training and have practiced it over and over again have all commented about how it comes up over and over again in our minds. It makes the Lord's Supper more meaningful. You see all these connections at different times you hadn't seen before. I mean, it will help your own faith just to learn this and get this material down. I came to a much deeper understanding of the price of sin, the meaning and purpose of animal blood sacrifices, more importantly, the sacrifice Christ made for us, and why baptism is so important. More importantly, this gives me a tool to set myself aside and simply present the gospel of our Lord and God to anyone who is willing. It freed me from feeling responsible for converting anyone and instead allowing the Lord to simply use me as a tool to plant seed. In that respect, it took much of the apprehension and fear out of sharing the good news. I've really learned that it is very difficult for people to change, and there are many different hearts out there. I need to be more self-examining in my own heart so the Lord can say of me, she did all that she could. The transformation in Mariana is it's pretty amazing. Let me tell you about Kathy Adams. This means a lot to me because I grew up with Kathy and John Adams. Last year, they had me out to the West County Ventura Church of Christ. And they had tried a lot of different things, door knocking, mass mailings. Notice, all of that is trying to reach out to strangers. Not the most effective way of evangelism. I'm not saying there's not a role for that. You'll get about 7% of your responses from those kind of approaches. You'll get 93% of your responses from people that you know and that know you. So that's where your focus ought to be. But at any rate, I'd finished some of this material in the big picture. And we went out to dinner afterwards, had a session very similar to this. And the people I was meeting with, including the Adams, a deacon and his wife, and somebody else from the church, and they said, well, you know, this is California, and there's just a lot of liberalism, and I'm just sorry, I just don't think this will work here. I mean, there's just not people that are interested. And so there's a real nice waitress by the name of Lauren that was waiting on us, and I said, so you're just real confident people aren't interested. I said, what about Lauren? Who? Lauren, our waitress. Oh, you want to ask her? I go, yeah, let's ask her. So I waited till the meal was over. I gave her a big picture card, and I just made a real simple little one-minute presentation about a Reader's Digest version of the scripture, and you did such a great job waiting on us, and you seem like you have such a servant's heart. And we just thought perhaps you'd be interested in hearing this really exciting one-hour presentation of what the Bible's all about. Would you be interested in that? She goes, yes. She goes, I've been looking for some place to worship, and I know I need to get my life right with God. She goes, this is an answered prayer. She said, here's my information. Let me know, please. So she left the information on a napkin for us. I said, now, what were you saying about folks not being interested? I mean, I just thought that was so ironic. Right underneath our noses, folks, there are people every day we bump into. And the reason why we don't get more opportunities is because we're not even thinking in those terms. Shame on us. Well, the rest of the story is poor Kathy Adams, who had just learned the big picture that day, she said, what am I going to do? I go, you got a lot of studying to do, don't you? So she just really dove into it, spent one Saturday, 7 or 8 hours going over it and over and over it, along with a couple of other members. Wouldn't recommend that. But she had somebody who was ready and willing, and the next week she met with Lauren, And then she met with her again. And then 2 weeks later, Lauren came to services, brought her mother, and Lauren was baptized into Christ. And she has been there every service. And now she's dating this young man, and she's invited him to a big picture presentation so she can understand the gospel. And shortly after this happened, on 6/12/13, I said, Kathy, would you send me a text and tell me what this is meant to you? This is what she wrote. My experience of the big picture of the Bible, this teaching tool, started in April of 2013. The PowerPoint presentation, the flip chart, and the booklet was all made available. I found that this method of reaching the lost with the truth of the gospel was understandable and easy to learn. For years, I've tried to invite friends, neighbors, co-workers to hear the gospel at a church service or attend a home Bible study with no success. I learned the big picture presentation with the help and encouragement of Brent and others, and I was eager to share the gospel using this method. I used the small business card, and I've introduced the big picture of the Bible to several. With Lauren, an appointment was set. I presented the PowerPoint slide from my laptop. The young college-age woman heard the message of the gospel, and 2 weeks later, she was baptized into Christ for the remission of her sin. She is now faithfully attending services and currently has a weekly class to help her as she grows in grace. I believe that this is a scriptural way to teach the lost in a form that is comprehensive and in an easy-to-follow format. I believe that any willing Christian can learn the big picture of the Bible and teach it to others. Now, listen to this. I will never be the same again. I finally have hope our congregation can grow, and I am 72 years young. Isn't that neat? And I just hear of stories about this all over the country. And she says, it definitely has brought about a change in attitude for me. So, I recommend mentoring classes. I call them Evangelism 101. Fencing lessons and how to wield the sword of the Spirit. Let's see here. You know what? That's not what I expected. All right, let's go ahead and look at this. 5 stages of evangelistic maturity. I think in order to understand where you want to go, you first have to figure out where you're at currently. Does that make sense? So, there are 5 stages of evangelistic maturity. Stage 1, all referred to as simply avoidance. That's where a lot of people are at. Never share the gospel with anyone. Attitude is, let others do it. If the subject comes up, retreat. Somewhat unprepared and unwilling to share the gospel, and they sort of feel, that's what my money is for. Then there's a reluctance. They occasionally will discuss religion with someone, but they have to bring it up. They usually only when backed into a corner. They don't feel very prepared. They kind of feel like that's what my preacher's for, and it doesn't really go very far from there. Then there's groups that are equipped. Those that are equipped and have been given some tools and some training, they occasionally will share the gospel with someone, but they kind of need a church program as a push. They've spent some time in preparation. They really, if they have a chance, would prefer simply to assist someone else. And if the truth were known, they still are fearful of rejection, which is where a lot of people are at. Then number 4 is they're confident. They're ready, willing, able to share the gospel with anyone. They will go for it when the opportunity presents itself. They spent significant time preparing. They're comfortable with the message, but they lack zeal. And truth of the matter is, they're kind of guilt motivated. Over the years, I wouldn't be doing evangelism. And then our preacher would talk about we need to be concerned for the lost. And I'd kind of feel guilty about that. And then I'd go out and make some meager efforts that didn't go well. And then I wouldn't think about it again until another lesson came later that made me feel guilty. Anybody relate to that? And the problem is, you're doing this saying you ought to be sharing your faith, but typically you're not giving people instruction on how to do it effectively in a way that is not so uncomfortable for you and not offensive to the prospect. And that's what this does. I mean, The worst you get is, no, I'm not interested in that. Okay. Some will, some won't. It's okay. Who's next? I mean, it's not like in the first century, folks, where people were incarcerated and threatened and sometimes executed for sharing their faith. We are not living in a Muslim country where it's illegal to share the gospel. Why are we so afraid at just an occasional no thanks? Or no, that's not for me. Okay, it's not for everybody. And then just move on. Try to keep the friendship. No real reason to be fearful with just the fact that somebody might say no. And then you got number five, committed. Actively pursue sharing the gospel with anyone, anytime, anywhere. You're passionate and consumed with the mission to sow the seed. You seek opportunities to share. You encourage and try to help others whenever you can. And very importantly, primarily, you are joy motivated. I don't want you to see this as some sort of burden that, oh, I've got to do this. You know, if you really love the Lord and you really are heaven bound and you believe that in your heart and you care about other people, isn't it just natural you're going to want to take people with you? Sure. So that's why we're going to end with looking into your own heart about your own confidence in regards to your own relationship with the Lord and your own joy. Because the most effective way to do this is for it truly to be good news as experienced in your own life. Now, in a lot of situations, people move from, you know, 1 to 2 or 1 to 3 or 2 to 4. But I found when the light bulb clicks and you understand this tool and how to use it and you have the appropriate support, that a lot of people go from 1 or 2 to 5. And that's exciting to see. You know what happens when you get a good percentage of the church that does that? It's called revival. I mean, really, it just absolutely changes the energy and the zeal and the culture of the whole congregation. Those of you that are parents and have children that are still of school age, we're losing so many of our young people, it's frightening, about 50% on average. Do you think we'd lose less of our young people if they grew up in a vibrant, thriving, growing church? I mean, you know, there's so many side benefits to what we're talking about here. And sharing the big picture is such an important part of all of this. Now, one of the concerns that people have is this whole idea of just sitting down with somebody and sharing the gospel in 1 hour or less. And I've had some people tell me they even thought that was unscriptural. Have you ever done a study of the book of Acts and looked at the cases of conversion in the book of Acts? You know, which is basically our divine blueprint for how to teach the gospel to the lost, right? 40% of the book of Acts is just sermons and what they taught people that were unbelievers and how they changed the message oftentimes based upon the prospect. But the gospel is for all, and the gospel spread. And I want you to look at all these examples. We don't have time to go through all of these. But in each case, guess what? All of these cases, these people responded after how many presentations? Just one. Now, I understand in Acts 2, at the day of Pentecost, you know, those were religiously minded people. They were mostly, you know, knowledgeable Jews. Okay, but what about the Philippian jailer? As far as we can tell, he's just a raw pagan. Looks to me like he figured out who Jesus was because they were in stocks there in the prison and they're singing hymns. And it sounds to me like he learned about who their God was and associated this earthquake with their God and says, "What must I do to be saved?" And they sat down and taught him about the gospel. And when he gets done, what happened the same hour of the night? Yeah, they took him out and baptized him immediately. So if you want a Bible example for what we're doing here, just look to the book of Acts. And if you're still uncomfortable with this, use this as a way to get in the door to see that someone is interested. And then after they're interested, try to back up and see if you can get them to study with you 4 or 5 more times before you make the appeal to baptize them. You want to use it in that way, you'd be my guest. But don't tell me this is unscriptural. I mean, this is exactly what we find happening in the book of Acts. Any comments about this? That makes sense? Okay. Now,
Prince,
yes.
One thing I think we forget is that God is not silent and inactive in the world. He's working on people. Saul gives an expression in his conversion to Saul. He said, "How hard it is to kick against the goats."
Yes.
There are folks out there that are being goaded. Circumstances and the providence of God through all kinds of means, and we show up, and so we have to trust that God is working in this. We don't have to figure out all the of them and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We'll let God be working on that. We're in sales, not management. We don't manage it. We're just going to take advantage of what God is doing to put us in touch with people.
Yeah.
Every time I sit down on a plane, I think, can I talk to this person about the gospel? Often you can, but it doesn't hurt to try. And you never know. Maybe God put them there just so I'd sit next to them.
Maybe so. And that insight of having your radar up is very helpful. And years ago, I was going through something similar. I was on a plane. I was actually putting together some notes for a presentation I was supposed to do in a couple of days. And the lady kept on asking me about it. And I have to tell you, initially I was a bit annoyed. Like, can't you see I'm working on this lesson, you know? And finally, I realized this lady's really serious, and so I put it down and started talking with her about the gospel and continued to study with her later, and that was when I was living in Tampa, and she came to the Temple Terrace Church, and we baptized her into Christ, just the lady I met on the plane. So they're everywhere, and we need to see ourselves in that light. I'd like to take about a 2 or 3 minute break, and then I'm going to reload something else on here that was supposed to be here that I want to show you in just a minute. But let's take a little break and stand up and kind of get your attention span back, and we'll revisit this in just a moment.